coming to you live from the constellation Ursa Minor Citrus. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me as always are tiny yellow bears. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 91. O Grethp, ye grepid slaps, plunder us in thine cropped farps.
Well, wipe your socks and shave your noodle, everybody, because you are back with the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And you're listening to us talk on the internet.
The internet. One of those.
Yeah. But that's what you're listening to us on.
The internet. It's a terrible podcast.
It's not a good one. So, we're back. We're here. This is the show. Broadcasting to you live from our new studio
on the moon,
that's where we're coming from. So we have a gin and tonic fountain machine here.
It's the best.
We have not one but two foosball tables. Neither of us likes foosball. They
no.
just came with the place. We have chairs that we can sit in. Do we have anything? Is that it? Is that all we've got?
Other than the gin and tonic fountain, that actually sounds like a church youth room. Just mm-hmm. like a disappointing, like, we got foosball tables.
It also sounds like a like an amusement room in a college dorm.
Oh, yeah.
Or one in like a student center. You're like, yeah, guys.
Anything where a middle-aged or older adult was like, what are the youths like these days?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, guys, you can come down and hang out down here. And it's got like a dingy sofa.
Yeah,
and
that, like, they found on the side of the road.
Yeah, a foosball table, but enough of the handles are broken that you can't really play.
Yeah.
And the ball has been missing since 1984 anyway.
They put a ping pong ball in there, not realizing that those things are different.
Yeah, there's like some art on the wall, but it's not like old people art. And it's also not like, it's just kind of unsettling.
It's just wrong.
Yeah, you're just like, this is not the place for that. Maybe in a different context it would be okay, but I don't like the shape or the shade. Where did it come from and when can it leave? Like, the carpet is somehow both brown and orange at the same time.
With a little bit of purple.
Yeah.
Just only from the right angle.
Yeah, and you're like, how? And
yeah. It's...
Yeah. Yeah. There's a vending machine nearby, but it doesn't give change.
And it has kind of an odd smell.
And all of the buttons indicate that they're going to give you Faygo, but none of them actually do.
No.
Which is good, but what they give you is inexplicably worse. It's like RC Cola or something. And you're like, how? How is this the only RC Cola and Tab vending machine in the Western Hemisphere?
Cherokee Red brand Cola.
Good God. Have we told that one on the podcast yet?
I don't know. There's not really much to tell other than that there is a Cherokee Red brand cola,
yeah,
and you have a friend who is excited about it.
Yeah, it's cherry cola, and it is disgusting. It tastes like cough syrup, and if you then mix it with rum and wine, it does not taste any better.
That is awful. Why would you mix anything with wine?
I wasn't in charge of the mixing.
Apparently, in parts of Europe, I have heard, I have not experienced this firsthand, a 50-50 mix of red wine and Coca-Cola is like a thing that they drink, which sounds awful.
I don't want anything to do with that. That sounds disgusting.
But so anyway, we are recording in my office because Tom is going out of town this week, so we couldn't do it at our normal time. And my office is in a church because that's where I work.
I figured you worked like for something different, but just happened.
Happened to have an office. So
like,
here.
We can't fit you into our regular building, so you're going to have to be in the church.
You're
going
to have to be in a coat room. This actually used to be a coat room. That's mm-hmm. why the door is like weird.
Mm-hmm.
Concrete block all the way around, and then there's just like a chunk of drywall with a door in it. That's my office. Yeah, no windows.
Yeah, your office is across the street in that church there. Now, they weren't thrilled about it, but we just told them, well, you know,
you got to deal with it.
You just got to deal with it.
He's bigger than you.
You just have to turn the other cheek.
And they were like, you got us there.
And then so we just installed you in that office, and now that's where you are.
So if you ever want to make Christians do a thing they don't want to, just be like, you got to turn the other cheek. And they'll be like,
you got me on that one. You know, maybe that's not the best joke to make here. Like, I hear some ominous rumblings of thunder outside.
You fear the lightning strike from above.
Yeah, yeah.
Somehow he can hear better in churches.
Well, yeah, they're like those old school ear trumpets, like Mozart, Beethoven?
Good old Mozart.
Which one got was deaf?
Beethoven.
Beethoven. He would wear it so he could hear stuff.
Sure.
That's what a church is like for the Almighty.
For the Almighty. Incredible. So today we're going to probably touch on a lot of stuff that we talked about last week accidentally, because our topic for this first segment is Real Time.
With Bill Maher. Guy's a dick.
He is a dick. Does he have a show called Real Time?
That's his show. It's Real Time with Bill Maher.
I thought it was just like
The Bill Maher Show.
Or Being a Big Dick with Bill Maher.
Yeah, no, he just sucks.
It's not about Bill Maher. He has no redeeming qualities.
Yeah, but we are in agreement and concurrence that Bill Maher sucks.
Yes. Real-time mechanics, which are games like we talked a fair amount more than we talked about the actual topic at hand, I think, last week, where you play in real time. There's a timer or a recording or some combination of the two going on behind you. It has to be behind. They're weird games. If you have the timer in front of you on the board, they just don't work.
They just fail. Yeah, or even if there's not a timer, it just matters who gets a thing done first. Like, you could, I forget the name of the game, I think it's like Egyptian Rat Screw, the old card game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where if you get your hand on top of the deck first, you just get it, whatever the thing is.
Yeah, because it's not so much necessarily that there's a timer, though there often is, but that there aren't turns. Everyone is doing a thing at the same time.
And if you happen to get yours done first, you're just like, yay, I got it done before you did, and so that makes me better than you in this board game we're playing.
I've seen some serious injuries come from Egyptian Rat Screw.
I never cared for it very much.
I've never played it. I just watched other people hurt each other playing it.
It always felt like it didn't reward anything you were playing on. It just rewarded you for having bigger hands than the other people and being more willing to just like, no, I'm tweaking your pinky. My hand was totally under it. I'll let go when you say
how
my hand
does the game
under
work? I know you have to get your hand down first, but why would what allows you to put your hand down?
I think if I remember right, you're looking for matches. So like you're flipping cards over, and when two come up of the same in a row,
so it's just like a reflex game,
yeah,
almost?
Yeah. You slap, and then whoever's hand is on the bottom of the pile gets it.
Wins. We had to make a, like, no jewelry rule.
Yeah, jewelry can be dangerous in that scenario.
And by we, I mean the people in my group of friends who played it, though I never did.
Right, right.
Because a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
Bloody hands and knuckles and... Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we also talked about...
Space Alert. We talk about that a lot. We use that as an example for many things.
It's a pretty good game.
We like it a lot.
Give it a try.
We like to put our hands all over it.
It's true. It uses a countdown time, not a countdown time even, just a soundtrack that plays for an amount of time, and things happen in real time. And you're sort of programming your reaction to those things, and then you hope it all works out in the end. And you just played one I haven't seen yet.
We get to try... Johannes wasn't there, unfortunately, but we tried to escape Curse of the Temple yesterday, which doesn't mean anything to you, because when you're hearing this, it won't be yesterday anymore. It will probably be several years prior.
It will always be yesterday.
prior to it, when you are listening to this as part of the evidence in our trial that eventually puts us in jail for our great crimes. But yeah, we got to try that. Escape features a system where everybody is rolling their dice all the time, and you're exploring a temple. And you need to roll certain values to spend to move to explore a new room or to move between rooms and to place gems, which are how you escape. You use the gems to get out of there somehow. But it does some cool things, too, because if you roll a black mask icon on your die, that die is locked and you can't roll it anymore until you or somebody on your card or on the same spot tile as you rolls a gold mask.
I didn't realize they had to be in the same location as you.
Yeah. Rolls a gold mask, and then they can free up any two dice on that card. So you might wind up with all of your dice locked, and you're like, please come to my card. No, stop just focusing on your own rolls. Come to my card and free me, because I'm trapped. I can't do anything.
How many dice does a player have?
Player has 5.
And so you're not really stuck until you've locked up all your dice or a lot of your dice?
Yeah, you can just keep re-rolling if you're down to one.
Is there a push your luck thing to it at all? Like, can you re-roll dice for any reason? Or
you can
just...
always re-roll, as long as it's not locked.
As long as it's not locked.
You can just keep sitting there, and that's what you do, because you've only got 10 minutes to do everything, and that sounds like a lot, but it's actually not enough.
But someone could be on the same space as you and roll a gold mask and be like, nah, I don't want that right now. Or does it just, you get what you rolled no matter what?
It's so fast that you... It's hard to say exactly how it phase out, but they could spend the gold mask to free your dice and then just immediately re-roll
it.
Okay. So you can use it and then immediately roll it again as fast as you can pick the dice up.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool that way.
Sounds interesting.
It's worth playing. It's very frantic. It runs into a problem I found where, and this I think is a problem, Space Alert dodges a little bit, but not infinitely, where you are so time constrained that you wind up just hunched over your own actions, just frantically rolling and re-rolling your dice and trying to keep them from falling on the floor and just looking for the thing you need that you aren't able to really interact with anybody else because you're so focused on getting your own stuff usefully done.
Uh-huh.
It's mitigated a little bit. We mitigated it because we split into teams of two.
Mm.
And we're like, you two go this way, we'll go this way. We'll try to stay relatively close to each other, but because one of the things you have to do in escape is place gems on these things, but sometimes you have to roll... more of a certain symbol than you can as one player, so you have to have two people to do it. So, like, I've only got 5 dice, and if it requires 7 keys to key icons to place gems,
uh-huh.
I have to have somebody else with me to accomplish
right.
it. So you've got to move as a team a little bit there. Two, it's good to move as a team because if you lock everything up and don't have somebody with you, you're just done.
Yeah. Sounds cool. What's
it's
it called?
Cool. Escape.
Just Escape?
I think it's Escape Curse of the Temple.
Hmm.
But if you Google Escape board game, it's the first one that comes up. It's pretty... Shut Up and Sit Down did a review of it, so therefore it sold a whole trillion copies.
And if you're sick of your significant other always talking about board games and you Google Escape board game, you're not going to find a lot of help because you're just going to find pages about a board game called Escape rather than how to escape board games. But if you are in that position, you're probably not listening to this podcast, so that wasn't very useful.
No, we're not going to help you get away if your significant other is into board games.
One of us. One of us. Okay.
Escape is also cool. One other feature that has that I like that takes nice advantage of its real-time nature. In one of the expansions that he had, our friend Devin who brought it had, you can get a curse that you can pick up if you explore certain rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole bunch of different ones, but some of them are things like now you have to play with one hand on top of your head. So you're trying to roll these dice, but you don't have that extra hand to catch them and roll with.
Oh, man.
So they're scattering everywhere, and it's just chaos.
Plus,
you look like a moron. Another one, if your die rolls off the table, now you don't have it anymore. You don't get it back. You can't pick it up. And the one that hit me that I thought was way harder than I thought it was going to be, you can't talk. So I get it, and then I'm trying to get Gary to unlock my dice. I'm going...
That doesn't count as talking.
Well, I didn't. It was the middle of the game, so nobody said anything.
Sure,
but I don't think so because otherwise, what would? I mean, I wasn't communicating much. I was just grunting and pointing at my dice, trying to get him to help me.
I guess that comes down to a house rule. I'm just thinking, like, what if you all know sign language? Is that okay?
Yeah, I feel like that would be incredibly hard to do this game with because you'd be trying to sign and then roll.
Yeah.
Like going back and forth feels like it would be difficult. But I don't know sign language, so can you one-handed sign language?
Not a lot of it. I learned a really strange thing. Apparently, sign language even so there's different sign languages. There's American mm-hmm. sign language. There's international sign language, which apparently almost no one knows, and they're different enough that it's hard to communicate between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there are sign language dialects. So depending on where you are geographically,
oh god,
people gesture like. Differently, mm-hmm. different amounts, or in different, like, in, it's all, you know, sort of in relation to your torso,
right?
Kind of where you're gesturing. Some people gesture out further or keep it closer, and apparently even that can be enough. That it's certainly notable to a person who knows sign language, mm-hmm. but it can get to a point where it's like their accent is too thick. I can't understand them.
That's crazy.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, you wind up with an accent with your hands.
Yeah,
That's. That is not something I thought of, but it makes sense that would happen, I guess.
Yeah. I really, really want to know sign language.
But you don't want to learn it?
Well, I mean, I kind of want to learn it, but not in any of the ways that I have attempted so far. Like, every time I've tried, I've been like, nope, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. No time for that.
You want to try to podcast in sign language one time?
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a really good podcast. Everyone, keep an eye out, an ear out. keep it something. Just look for our never mind. It's not going to work.
The sign language episode.
just an hour of silence with a little bit of like swishy flicking hand noise. Just if you can figure out what people are signing from the sounds of their like arms brushing against their chests and whatever, you're some kind of wizard.
You have magic powers.
And clearly not a deaf person. So, have you seen any games that use the real-time mechanic? Because this strikes me, I feel like there are ones out there that do this, and I can't think of one off the top of my head, where it's not the main mechanic of the game, but there might be a tiebreak or a mini-game in there that is real-time where the rest of the game isn't.
There's one called Time and Space that I've been meaning to check out, where it's a interstellar trading type of game, so you're developing your, like, trade empire and trading resources and whatnot. But in order to like, so say you want to move your spaceship from planet A to planet B, you flip one of your, I think you have two, one of your two sand glasses over and put it on the ship and then you wait.
Is a sand glass different from an hourglass?
Is that not what they're called?
I've never heard it. I guess it could be.
Sure. Like, yeah, it's like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
Exactly. Not hours through the sand glass.
Hours through the sand glass sounds like the title of a novel.
Not a good one, but one that you would read.
It sounds like it would be about a young girl coming to terms with her budding sexuality set against the cornfields of northeastern Iowa.
Northeastern? Wow, that's a new one.
Yeah, it's getting chaotic.
Wow.
This is the worst f***ing podcast on the internet. Anyway, so you put your hourglass on your ship.
You mean a sand glass.
And then when the sand runs out, or the hour, whatever, then the ship moves. And then you can use that hourglass again to do something else. And you've got two, so you're trying to manipulate when they run out so that you don't have a lot of downtime. Mm-hmm. I haven't played it, but that seems to be the idea, as you move your ships about and develop. So they're also used to develop things on your home world or whatever. That's kind of what you're talking about. Like, it's a sub thing, but it's not the main thing.
Yeah, that's not so much a mini game as it is a more, I guess, a minor. It's not the driving mechanic for the game, but that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I've been meaning to go on the internet and buy it, but then also I've been forgetting that it exists for months at a time.
Oh, you know what I might have been thinking of why can't I know? Cosmic Encounter. It's not really real time, but it's on a timer, so it's sort of real timey. When you want to work out a, so you have to fight someone, but you've agreed to try to, like, I'm just not going to play it. Or no, you both play, what are the cards
the
called?
The negotiation
cards. Yeah. Then you have 60 seconds.
Yeah.
To work out the terms of your negotiation.
Yes.
And then if you fail, I think whoever would have won based on just raw stats before any cards were played would have won or something like that. Right. That might be what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's... I'm always leery to include that sort of thing in there because I'm leery to include mechanics or items that require you to bring in outside tools. Cosmic Encounter doesn't include an hourglass to measure 60 seconds.
Sure.
So you have to have a watch or a stopwatch or your phone or whatever. And that's not a big deal because most people who would play a board game would have an ability to measure a one-minute timer.
Right.
But it's still an extra thing outside of the box. And we were talking a little bit about this last week, how board games are kind of self-contained.
Yeah.
So as long as you keep all the parts that came in the box in the rule book and can still speak the language...
Oh, man. How weird is that as a concept?
What's that?
Here's a boring writing prompt for a story that could be terrible or good, I guess. Like, a future where time is no longer measured the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we ditched seconds and minutes, and no one remembers those things or has a way to track them. So now you've dug up something, board game, just because that's what we're talking about.
Sure.
That's like, well, you have 1 minute. And everyone's like, what's a minute? What even is a minute? Finish this in a minute? I don't know what a minute is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they measure things in a much longer, so it becomes impossible to play the game. Or whatever it is that's set to a timer.
Radically alters how it works because you can't figure it. And then you wind up, you would have to describe the characters like doing research, trying to go back through different time systems and trying to figure out how things match up. But then you get into like questions of relativity and how much time was that actually? Has it changed? Because our planet is now orbiting faster after the great planetary speed up of that one time.
The great planetary speed up.
Yeah, that's how that goes down.
Love it.
chaos, just sheer chaos. But that could be better than you're giving it credit for, I think.
Yeah, it could be.
See what I
think
do.
It could be better if an author did it rather than if I spitballed it in 30 seconds on a podcast.
On a podcast about something unrelated, yeah.
Yeah, I actually like, I see what you're saying about leaving out, you know, not forcing players to bring an extra, uh-huh. I mean, if nothing else, you can have a third party go 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, and you're not, or sure. 1 Mississippi, however you count seconds, that's not particularly accurate to give your minute. I don't think that's a great example of real time as a intentional mechanic, even though I brought it up. so much as it is an example, so that's mitigation. That's why they have that in there. That's like, well, yeah, you could have these people sit here and shout back and forth at one another and do their intergalactic politics routine mm-hmm. for 45 minutes. And the other three players in the game are just going to have to sit there and watch. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why that's on a timer.
It makes
so
sense.
It's not so much a mini game as it is like, hey, don't be that guy.
Yeah, don't
just
suck.
Just work out your crap and right. move on. But at the same time, there gotta be. I feel like the real time mechanic is cool and I really like it. But there are, I'm sure, people who don't. I know there are people who don't like it.
Alphonse.
Yeah, and I think it probably does best in a sub game, mini game, like chunk of the greater whole mm-hmm. than it does as your main mechanic.
Yeah.
As far as accessibility.
As far as accessibility. And two, even like Space Alert's not too bad because you have to coordinate what you're doing. But even then, you're so hunched over your own board trying to keep your own stuff organized that you're not doing much with the other players mm-hmm. or paying attention to what they're doing other than yelling at them to do a certain thing.
Until you get to a point where you're like, okay, should I do this? Okay. And then you all stop everything and you're like, so I'm going here. Who's going there? Are you mm-hmm. going there? Wait, you're going there? I need to go back and change three
exactly.
turns ago.
Yeah.
And that's more because it's programming than because it's, I mean, it's more because it's a combination yeah. of programming in real time.
The real time just puts some weight on it. It kind of puts a foot on your back and shoves you forward as you're trying to work.
Have you ever seen a game do real time, a competitive, not even necessarily combat, but real-time competition? Because I feel like, I guess dexterity games do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why I don't like dexterity games.
Right.
But do you know of anything that does it outside of dexterity games?
Not really, because with any kind of real-time thing, you know, if you can do the whatever the action is faster,
mm-hmm.
you have an advantage. But if nobody else is watching you, is able to keep track of what you're up to, it's kind of easy to cheat.
Yeah.
And I feel like it breaks, like nobody plays with cheaters, but we all play with cheaters. So it breaks that kind of implicit, we're all playing a game, we can all see what you're doing, don't be that guy.
Yeah.
And give somebody who is unscrupulous or just has a desperate need to win because their dad didn't hug them enough when they were a kid, the chance to slip an extra card or do something when they shouldn't.
Yeah.
I think.
I think the problem with a real-time competitive game would be like just like my problem with dexterity games, I guess, is that there's always going to be a person who eventually you're going to work your way down to the person who's inherently the best at mm-hmm. it, and there's not much you can do to train yourself to be better. The guy who thinks faster is always going to have an advantage, but he's going to have a vastly amplified advantage in a timed mm-hmm. turn or in a real-time game, right?
And in a game that doesn't have that real-time, the guy who thinks better has an advantage if he has time to get to that point,
yeah,
where he thought it through better than the guy who intuitively gets maybe 60% of the way to the right move,
yeah,
but if you have time to outthink him, you can basically, are you Batman or not? Because if Batman has time to plan, he wins the thing.
Let's come back to that. I need to pause this
okay.
real quick. Thank you.
Welcome back to God Talk with Johannes and Tom, the show that loves you just the way you are.
We're just so glad that you're here with us this evening.
So very happy to have you here. We just want to reach out and give all of you a nice big friendly hug.
And we're going to open up the Bible now and really explore the scriptures.
But first, before we get into that, that good old-fashioned old-timey religion, we'd just like to apologize for what came before the break and promise you that that'll never happen again here on this on God Talk with Johannes and Tom.
We're changed men.
Deeply changed men. We're different than we were before.
God, can you imagine?
That would be a worse podcast than the one we actually do.
Somehow,
yeah. That would not be okay. That probably wasn't okay, what we just did.
Yeah.
But welcome back after that brief pause there where Johannes had to go off. And I don't were you kicking the homeless? Was that what you were up to? Or
yes, that's one of our outreaches here. Yeah. Is kick the homeless.
Yeah, it feels like
there's just not enough people in the Washtenaw County area kicking the homeless.
And you provide that service.
It's just me by myself.
It's not so much a program at that point as it is a hobby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gotcha.
I like to think of it as like hobby feels just so demeaning. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little low. I like to think of myself as sort of a prosumer, homeless kicker. I'm at a professional level, but uh-huh. I'm not being paid.
Gotcha.
So.
Gotcha. Yeah.
but I got the cleats like the pros.
Well, yeah. You need them. Now, so do you when you kick? You use the bottom of the foot.
It depends, like but
you're,
yeah,
you're not
yeah,
using...
like that's where you get a lot of. There's a lot more surface area, mm-hmm. especially, you know, you can do a lot more good.
So you're not coming in with the blade.
The worst.
Yeah, it
How
is.
How are we having this conversation?
It's extremely not okay. At least one of us is a terrible person.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's Gary.
It's probably Gary's fault. Yeah, I would blame him.
So we're bringing it back to Batman.
Batman. I don't remember why I brought him up.
Something about preparing ahead of time. If we're talking about the guy who can react quickly, bang, bang, bang,
sure.
You know, in a time thing versus the guy who has, were it not a real time game, the guy who is better at preparing.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy who can intuitively respond quickly, mm-hmm. but really is only operating at, I think you said, 60%.
Sure.
Know, his intuitive response is pretty good, but it's not the best.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do better on a timer versus the guy who does very well when he can prepare, mm-hmm. when he has time, who, given the time to do it, is going to get up to 100%, where intuitive guy might say, well, I've got my best shot. I'm just going to stop timer or no.
Right.
And
right.
then you made a Batman comparison because he prepares before
right.
whatever it is that Batman does.
He punches.
Wearing tights.
Honestly, he runs around.
A codpiece of some sort for some reason.
He runs around at night and punches the mentally ill. That's
just
really how that happens.
Yeah, that is true.
He just beats up people who probably should be getting counseling and probably some meds.
It's not entirely his fault. Like, if you think about it, all of those people are in Arkham Asylum,
mm-hmm.
and they keep getting out. Like,
it's
what
true.
Is up? You know, Batman and Arkham Asylum could probably save themselves a whole lot of trouble by just having Arkham Asylum hire Batman
mm-hmm.
as the head of security at Arkham Asylum, and then just maybe once the people, the criminally insane, are mm-hmm. in there,
well, but,
then they could stay in there.
But the problem you run into there is that the Gotham City PD has demonstrated that they can't get people into Arkham Asylum in the first place. So Batman can't be running security at Arkham because he's got to be putting people in Arkham.
Mm.
So he can either be keeping people in Arkham or putting people in Arkham, where they will then get back out.
Well, he should work harder at keeping his various Robins alive, and once they graduate the Robin program alive, they can go be the head of security at Arkham Asylum. No, am I wrong?
I love the idea that there is an endless stream of nubile young acrobats.
Terrified that you've chosen nubile.
Dude, Robin is nubile. That is the only appropriate description for that character.
I'm not thinking about that.
He's just nubile.
Okay, just, I believe you.
Think
about
it.
But I'm going to pretend that it never happened.
Apply your brain to it. You know it
I'm
to be true.
I'm going to apply some brain bleach.
Anyway, there's an endless stream of young acrobats working their way through Robin College, studying all of these things so they can be Robins one day. And like it's like how at med schools they have a ceremony where they get their white coats, they get their little green short shorts at the end of the Robin program.
Yeah. No, they get green short shorts at the end of the Robin program, or they had to wear them. That was their their school uniform. And when they finally graduate, they're allowed to go wear their black and teal green full bodysuit. What's his name? Nighthawk.
I think that's one of the Robins. Anyway. So you're saying the Robins that go out and fight crime with Batman are students?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And when they graduate, then they get to go be other kinds of superheroes.
Yeah, no, come on. Those Robins aren't ready to really
show
Robin it up.
Yeah. Well, really, he's being a little reckless with his student there. Like, that's not good. That's not good pedagogy.
Like, well, at least one of them died, right? Like, clearly, he's not.
Yeah, the Joker beat him to death with a crowbar.
Yeah. Like, you know, maybe keep the insanos a little further away from your
student crime fighters.
Your as-yet-untrained student crime fighters.
Yeah.
Like, how many Robins have been beaten to death by Jokers and whatnot? That we haven't seen, because it was like first time out. He's like, right in the temple with a crowbar.
Dang it. Bad way to go.
I mean, Harley Quinn carries that giant friggin' hammer.
That's probably just
splattered with Robins.
That's true. She probably notches the handle for each Robin she gets.
I know I would.
Yeah, me too. Who wouldn't?
Sane people.
Yeah, that's fair. So,
well, in real time, we're beyond the end of this segment.
But I do have one final question before we turn on. So, are the other Robins, like the other student Robins, just lurking around the periphery of his fight with the supervillains, waiting for a Robin to drop?
I imagine the one that gets to go out with the Batman is probably one who has performed particularly well or received some sort of scholarship.
So he's got high marks in Robin's school.
Yeah.
So the other Robins are back at the academy. Right. Robin-ing it. Like, is Alfred running this?
Probably. Bruce Wayne makes him do everything else. That's why not?
This is going to this is a lot to take in.
Yeah,
we should we have to take a break.
Alternatively, Aquaman is training them because what else does he have to do?
He can talk to the fish.
Exactly, and the fish are like, "It's all good here."
I think he's got super strength.
Have they made an Aquaman comic book about the Deepwater Horizon disaster yet?
Oh my god, probably.
Because they should.
They absolutely should.
They'll be like, he'll be like, thank god, the first thing for me to do in a long, long time.
Jason Momoa is playing him in the movie.
Yeah, that's right. That's an odd choice.
He's Hawaiian, I guess.
Right. But he's also too awesome to be Aquaman.
That's a fair point. Well, yeah, but he's awesome enough to be Conan the Barbarian, and that movie sucked, so maybe it'll
fair
balance
point.
Out,
fair point.
And it'll be great.
All right, we'll be back with more just gibberish nonsense.
Hopefully there'll be more God Talk with Johannes and Tom.
Oh, yeah. If you have topic requests for God Talk with Johannes and Tom, you should certainly let us know on Twitter at God Talk or at Mildly Alarming. Please tweet at God Talk. I'm sure that's a thing. It's certainly not ours, but tweet weird crap at them.
You could send us a show at either godtalk@gmail.com or mildlyalarming@gmail.com.
Please do that. Or you could find us on the web where there is a comment section at www.godtalk.com or mildlyalarming.com.
Or you can just, you know, go someplace nice and quiet and calm and tranquil and just very earnestly pray your question and, you know, the Almighty will see that we receive that question that you have for us.
Amen, brother.
Amen.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by
Meat Brand Meat is the meatiest meat you'll ever meet. With 7 servings of meat in each spoonload of Meat Brand Meat, you'll meet your meat needs with one meaty heap. And at Meat Brand Meat, we meet your concerns head on. So where we used to make our meat out of sawdust and nickels, now we only use 100% real meat. It's the brown can full of meat in your grocery store, and it says Meat Brand Meat on it. So serve yourself up a heaping helping of Meat Brand Meat. Meat Brand Meat, the only meat that's meat.
Welcome back to God Talk with Tom and Johannes.
We're just pleased as punches to have you here. And on this segment of God Talk, we're going to be talking about elimination. Like how some people get eliminated to hell because they don't know the love of our Savior, Jesus Christ.
I can't. Nope.
Nope, not going to touch that one?
Nope.
Nope, I went there.
Couldn't keep it.
Couldn't keep it together.
Couldn't
hold on to that one, huh? Well, welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And we are not, we shouldn't be doing this. That wasn't okay. But for our second segment today, we're going to be talking about player elimination and how sometimes players are playing a game and then a thing in the game happens and then they don't get to play anymore. They're just done. They don't get to play. They have to sit there and watch everybody else have fun and think about how much they failed.
Serves them right for being losers.
Freaking losers. Losing all the time. Hashtag.
Have we talked about the hashtag?
I don't think we've
mentioned
the hashtag. I don't think we've talked about the hashtag yet.
Well, it bears refreshing even if we
have.
The hashtag is hashtag, this is why people think we're gay. And it's never actually been used as a hashtag. It's just something we say to one another, which is probably another hashtag, this is why people think we're gay moment.
So, as you may have guessed, Johannes and I know each other very well. We were actually hatched from the same giant egg, and we go places together. Like, sometimes we just go to the films, we go out to eat, we go to coffee shops, we go to leather bars as a team, all sorts of places.
Yeah.
And people there...
Hand-holding competitions.
Yeah, open-mouth tongue-kissing.
Marathons.
We go there together. And we chat, and we have a nice time, and occasionally, every now and again, we realize that the waitress, or the clerk, or whoever, totally thinks that we like to kiss in our cars out on Lover's Lane. A make-out point.
Yeah. Any of those
Hump
places.
Hump Peninsula. You're gonna have to bleep that, aren't you?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I probably should, but no, I'm not gonna.
Fair enough. So, it's funny. It's a humorous thing that happens in our lives. I know we've talked about this before because I remember saying that exact thing in a previous episode.
Yeah. And anyway, since Tom never even had anything vaguely Twitter related until recently, and I don't use my Twitter all that much, that's the only hashtag we need. So now whenever we note that the waiter or waitress or whatever has given us that kind of look, that sort of...
has not even bothered to ask if she should split the checks, but it's just like they're paying
together. No, they're together. They are together in every sense of the word together.
They have a shared bank account among other shared things.
We occasionally will just make brief eye contact, 5 to 10 minutes of solid unbroken eye contact, and then say hashtag.
And we both know what that means.
And now, so do you.
We shared that with you because we're sharing good people.
Sharing, anyway. Sharing, yeah. People. Sharing.
We do share an awful lot on this show. What the hell was the segment about?
Player elimination.
So, God, I got a feeling we talked about that before.
We brought it up a little bit because there was a board game hour about it. So we talked about it a little bit.
Is it pronounced beard game hour?
Sure. That would be probably a different thing, though.
Okay.
That may also be... What would be a beard game? No, let's... Okay, no more rabbit trails. We need to talk about player elimination.
So, player elimination is kind of a controversial topic, or at least it's one that I wonder about.
Well, controversial mechanic.
Mechanic, yeah. In board
gaming.
People
are like, oh no, they're talking about player elimination. I'm turning this off.
Yeah. Frickin'... I got nothing. Anyway, So player elimination, you know, a player is playing, something happens, they don't get to play anymore, they're done, they're out. So in Risk, if you lose all your armies, you're out. In Monopoly, if you lose all of your money, you're out. Or if you just decide you're playing Monopoly and you have better things to do in life, you're out. And so on, that kind of a thing.
I like that your examples so far have showed player elimination to be just sweet, merciful release from whatever hellish nightmare you are trapped
in. Pure torment. Yeah, so player elimination... can be a bad thing, and in that somebody doesn't get to play no more.
Right.
And that's not good. You don't want somebody who came to play games with you to not be playing games anymore. On the other hand, it might be a mercy if they can't contribute anymore. Like, if all you control anymore in Risk is the Middle East, and most of Asia and Europe is controlled by another player, and Africa and South America has another player, and there's some other bastard building up in Australia because it's all he ever freaking does... like, if you just lose, like, that's fine, because now you can go do a different thing instead of sitting there going, oh, man, I placed two armies, my turn's over every turn.
Yeah.
And it's, like, 45 minutes between turns, because everybody else has legitimately interesting things to do. So on the one hand, it's not great, because you don't want people to be eliminated and not get to play. On the other hand, if there's a point where a person is so far gone, they're not going to be able to influence the game in a significant way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should include a way to get them out of the game entirely so they can go do different things.
Yeah.
I think. I feel like that's actually, you're right, that is a mercy at that point.
Yeah.
And Risk is a bad example for it because we all don't like Risk.
Right. Or Monopoly.
Yeah, they're not good, well-designed games. Trying to think if there's any games that
Eclipse.
Implement it well. No, but that only happened because you committed suicide.
No, but I did that. I did that because I was going to lose. Uh-huh. I think that was a mercy because allowed me to get out before I had to just watch my unwinnable position slowly erode.
Sure, but I don't think the game pushed you out.
No. But it's player elimination, and that I was able to be eliminated. But take my situation there aside, and frankly, I did that partly because I couldn't win and I uh-huh. didn't want to sit through the rest of the game, and partly because I actually wanted to see how the mechanic of
sure
like toppling your own empire by overspending worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. But say you're in a position in Eclipse where now there's only, what is it, 7-8 turns?
Nine rounds,
yeah. In Eclipse, but they're pretty long rounds. Like, that's not a short game.
No.
Say you hit round 5 and you're being attacked from both sides and there's no way out. Like, it's not really fun while everyone else is upgrading their ships and moving on and attacking mm-hmm. other people if you've been hopelessly crippled.
Right, right.
And you're just there. Now you're fodder for whoever wants to finish off the rest of your...
Yeah, you're better off on your phone mocking the people still playing and browsing Imgur.
Or whatever, yeah. So... I think in a lot of situations with those really long games, player elimination is a mercy.
If you can set it up so that it's a smooth exit, yeah.
And as long as there's something else for them to do. See, if you're the first one out and the next person out, and now we this is where we talked about it a little uh-huh. bit, is the guy actually in that board game hour says, we're now all boredom proof because of our smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
Things to do when you're eliminated. Make sure there's something to do for players who are eliminated. Once the second player is eliminated, you know, set up a little two-player game.
Yeah.
And now there's something for them to do if you're having a game day.
That's a game day, not a game design.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's not the fault of the designer. But a lot of people come down really hard on player elimination. Mm-hmm. I think from the not unreasonable assumption that you're just playing this game.
Right.
You haven't set aside an entire Saturday or an entire evening or whatever it is to play a bunch of games with a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
You have a 4-player game and there are 4 of you. And when player 4 loses and there's still 20, 30, 40, whatever minutes of play left for the other 3,
mm-hmm.
that isn't great for that person.
No.
Like, I understand. I wouldn't say that player elimination is great always across the board, the end. Stop mm-hmm. saying it's a bad thing. And a game that can reasonably keep those players in should allow
right.
people to be engaged and allow people to try to come back from being destroyed. But in the games we've talked about so far, there's not a lot of coming back. We went from 9 rounds is still not a short game in Eclipse to, if you're trying to rebuild, if you said, okay, you've been destroyed, start a new empire,
mm-hmm.
trying to rebuild,
yeah, you'd be
starting on round 5 in Eclipse, that's not going to be fun either.
You'd be in a bad way.
Yeah. So, in those situations, you can see both sides of the coin. It's a weird coin that doesn't work in 3 dimensions, because you can see both sides of it without a mirror.
Let me see that coin.
No. It's mine.
Give me
it's
the
mine.
Coin.
It's priceless.
Give me the damn coin.
It belonged to my grandmother.
Oh, really?
That's
a nice story.
Yeah. Give it back. Give it back. You can't look at it.
I don't
Give
have
it.
The coin. You
where
have the coin.
Where did it go?
I don't know. I didn't touch it.
It's gone. Tom lost my coin.
You
my
lost,
priceless heirloom coin.
You lost your own priceless heirloom coin. My hands were here on my side of the table immersed in Jell-O.
Gross. So what are some times when... So we've given examples of games where player elimination is sort of merciful.
Mm-hmm.
What are some games you've seen where it's either a bad thing? Well, let's start with it's a bad thing. What are some games where player elimination, you're just like, that's terrible. Why is that there?
I'm not thinking of anything because a lot of the games we've been playing lately in the last couple of years don't have it.
Right.
Or they have it, but everybody loses if you lose anybody. Like, I was about to say Samurai Spirit, But if any player dies, the whole team loses there.
Well, so here are some games we play regularly that have player elimination that doesn't leave anything for the eliminated player to do.
Mm-hmm.
Eclipse. Mm-hmm. Or Eclipse. That's not the one I meant to say at all. Oh, I'm totally blanking. Cards, bluffing.
Resistance?
Nope, the other one. Coup.
Coop.
Coup has player elimination.
I think it's co-op.
Co-op has player elimination. But they're pretty quick games. Like,
yeah.
If you get eliminated first from coup, you have, what, 10 minutes to wait?
Not very long.
If that.
And
so you could say that's bad. You could say that's bad because you don't have time to start another game.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to kind of sit there.
Well, but coup is nice, too, because the hidden information element of it, once you're sitting back and not actively participating, it's entertaining to watch the other people sweat their way through.
Yeah.
Something, especially because you can stand up, walk around the table, and see what everybody's got.
Yeah.
And be like, aha, you are so wrong.
I am rarely, like, deeply disappointed. Like, I'll be disappointed at a loss in coup because I didn't win.
Mm-hmm. But not
because, oh, no, I don't have anything to do.
Now you'll be, I don't want to wait for the next round.
That's never been an issue.
Every now and again, I felt like I would like to start the next round. Like, you guys need to hurry up. But that might just be because I'm impatient.
It could be.
Yeah.
I may have felt that way at some point.
But it's never to the point where I'm like, I regret coming to this game day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's never bothered me significantly, I would say.
King of Tokyo is another one with player elimination that doesn't usually last for very long.
Uh-huh.
It can. Because you can get yourself killed right out, or people can really, you know, the last two players can really drag out the last bit there. I've not seen that game become problematic, but I think part of it is that both of those games, we tend to play at the end of the night,
mm-hmm.
where people, or either right at the beginning of the night, where people are like, whatever, you know, we're here, we're not, we might not even have been in on this game, go talk to the person who showed up halfway through.
Sure.
Or it's the end of the night and people are like, okay, I need a break for my brain anyway.
Yeah.
And I think there's a very distinct difference between games with player elimination on a game day and games with player elimination when you said, we have time for a board game, let's play one.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
And I think probably more recently, a lot of game designers probably come at game design with the idea that people are going to play these on a game day. They're going to be playing board games, they're not going to just sit down and play
mm-hmm.
Sorry with their family. Like, board games are no longer a, like, dumb thing you do with your kids because it's raining and you don't want them to watch too much TV or whatever.
Right.
They're like, they're fun. They're not Sorry and Monopoly. And so they're fun enough that you probably want to do more than one of them at a go.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're not. It's not, oh, well, I lost the one game we were going to play, and now I have to go sit by myself while I wait for everyone else to finish the one game we were going to play.
It's more like, haha, bastards, you're all focusing on the game, and I'm out, and that means I get free reign over the guacamole.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go get another beer and fill up a bowl with guac and get some chips, and there's not going to be any left for you, and it serves you right. You get to play a game, I get to eat all of the avocado dip.
It's legit.
Yeah.
I like guacamole a lot. It's really good.
It's pretty great.
I like it. It's quite good. I had to get the cheaper stuff the other day.
Yeah?
I was not as happy. It didn't have the nice chunk to it.
Hmm.
I like the chunk.
Sometimes I feel like it has a lot of, like, citric acid, like
the
lemon juice stuff.
The cheaper kind of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That preservative, because it keeps it from turning brown and, mm-hmm. and you know, expiring or whatever. But
right.
Then it's just like, this is weird, tangy, unpleasant guacamole.
Yeah.
Why have you done this to me, guacamole makers?
It's tragic, really. It's crime.
First world problems.
We have... First world problems, our dip that is shipped in from Mexico to Michigan is not up to snuff.
Yeah.
Snuff?
Yeah.
Stuff?
Snuff.
Stuff? Okay.
Sure. So we have a game that has player elimination.
What game is that?
Probably all of them, actually. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Entirely. But Big Man has player elimination at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So this wasn't really intentionally. We weren't really saying like, oh, well, we don't want people getting... Well, maybe we did. I don't remember. But I don't feel like we came to this and said, oh, well, we don't want people kicked out at the beginning of the game and not having anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just made sense. For the majority of the game, if you would have been killed and knocked out, you're recaptured and there's a penalty. You lose some gear and some some treasure and whatever, and you continue playing. I guess we must have come to that from a we don't want player elimination standpoint, but I don't remember the conversation happening.
I don't remember deliberately writing it. I don't remember a time when it wasn't that way.
I don't think it ever was not that way.
I don't remember ever having that conversation. I don't remember actively thinking about it while I was writing the very first draft of the rules. It just seemed natural not to ever leave it at a point where somebody was sitting there.
Yeah.
Not doing anything.
So I wonder, it's actually kind of interesting to think about, like, is it so sort of ingrained in us that player elimination is bad that we just designed around it unintentionally?
Probably.
I mean, I think in this game it would be bad because it does tend to run an hour or so.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a very real possibility that you could get knocked out of the game in the first 5 minutes.
And then just be
that
like,
would be
bored.
That would not be fun.
Yeah, it wouldn't be good.
So, but there is still player elimination. Once the exit card is drawn and you can no longer draw any cards from the deck, and cards are your victory points and your health and your speed and your fight and everything, now there's a hard limit on everyone's ability to do pretty much everything but move. Even move is limited just slightly less so. And now, once you can't draw any more cards, that means if you die, you can't refill your hand, so you can't come back. So for the last few minutes of the game, you can take people out.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's player elimination, but it's mitigated player elimination, but at the cost of adding another mechanic that people tend to hate, which is just, I don't even have a term for it, but something that allows for a last minute flip-flop of who's the victor, right? You could have the most victory points, but not have a lot of cards in your hand.
And so you aren't able to make it to the exit.
And get killed after the exit's put down and lose, even though you played the best game up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't like that. I like it. I think it fits the theme of our game very
well.
Yeah,
it's kind of a come-from-behind thing, and it's
like the leader shell. It's a blue shell.
Yeah, it's a blue shell. Some people hate that. Gabe from Penny Arcade, I know, just despises it, but it's
I hate it when I'm doing well.
Well, yeah. I think it, I guess from my perspective is that's, you should be planning for that part of the game too.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's part of what you need to keep in mind as you're making your plans over the course of the game.
Well, I think a recent change we've made to the, it used to be that all the gear that you could get in your treasure hoard counted as victory points in Big Man. Now you have coins that are worth victory points, but also having them slows you down.
Right.
And then you have gear in your treasure hoard that helps you when you're in the dungeon, but isn't worth any points. And so now there's a balance. So it's clear if you're what you're preparing for. If you're saying, I'm going to be really great while I'm in the dungeon, you're probably gearing up, but you're not going to have a lot of victory points at the end. And so now there's a balance. There are more meaningful decisions for players to make.
Is it a recent change if we made it in July?
It's a recent change as far as number of changes made to the game.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Is it really July?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
I like board games.
I do too.
They're fun.
I like our board. Is it bad? This is probably bad. Often, especially like in board game hour, a question will come up and be like, what's your favorite game that uses this mechanic? Or what game do you think uses this kind of mechanic particularly well? And if there's a mechanic I really like, the first example that comes to my head is always one of our games. I'm like, well, I think this one, that's ours and it's not released, so I can't say that. Also, I would look like just a real
I don't know if it's bad. I don't know.
We make good games, guys. Maybe one day you could buy one.
Hopefully. We also make a podcast you could listen to.
You could put it in your ear holes.
Put it in them.
Right up in there.
Right up in the ear holes.
Do you have anything else to say about
player elimination? I think player elimination has to be, like any mechanic, it's got to be used judiciously and appropriately. Yeah.
You don't want to eliminate all the players because then there will be no one to play your board games with.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you might be one of them and you could be eliminated. And
you don't
want to
be eliminated.
You'd have been eliminated.
You'd be in hell.
It's a real problem. And this has been Bible Talk with Tom and Johannes.
I thought it was God Talk.
Oh, it was. Damn. I mean, shucks.
This is why we shouldn't record in a church. The humor temptation is just overwhelming, and this is exactly where we should not be succumbing to temptation.
I guess, yeah.
He said, gin and tonic in hand.
In hand.
Should you really be putting this on the internet, like, just like discussing how you're drinking G&Ts in your office at your job? Are we going to get you fired?
Yeah, whatever.
Listen, man.
I used to have a refrigerator in here full of beer. I think if people don't know if people don't know, and those people have listened to this podcast already and not been upset about it, I'm probably fine. Did that make any sense?
No, I didn't follow it.
Okay.
But listen, I just spent an entire weekend putting a roof on your house. If you lose your job and get evicted now, I'm going to be upset.
On the flip side, if I lose my job and get evicted, I won't have to finish the roof.
You raise an excellent point.
Yeah. Take that, suckas, at the bank or whoever.
I'm not sure who the sucker there is.
Yeah, me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, it's probably okay.
It'll all work out in the end, because we're making all this extra money from this podcast.
Right, right. It's a very lucrative business we're in here.
Yeah. Not to mention all the money we make designing board games.
Huge. This stacks of dollar bills.
This podcast money is just icing on the cake.
We got, it's cream, really. Cash rules everything around me.
Get the money.
Dollar bill, y'all.
Well, speaking of cash money, we have contractual obligations to our advertisers that they have to have ads for a certain amount of time at a certain time. So we should wrap this one up. If you have anything at all to say about how offended you are by our blasphemy or other things, I don't know.
I don't either.
Whatever. Put it on the internet at us in a direction that might reach us via Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
Or send us an
electronic mail
at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Leave a comment on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You could also find us on iTunes and leave us a review, or on Stitcher, where you might be able to leave us a review. I still haven't actually looked to find out, but you can listen to us there. We're also on TuneIn Radio.
Or you can also send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.org. It'll just take a little bit longer to get there.
Like maybe forever.
Yeah.
Cool. See you next week. Bye.
Okay, bye.
And now, in a patriotic moment to honor all our brave man and woman in the Mildly Alarming, little Jimmy here will lead us in the Mildly Alarming pledge. Go ahead, sport.
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the hosts of the Mildly Alarming podcast, and to the nonsense for which it stands, one podcast on the internet, conceived in a gin-soaked stupor and dedicated to the proposition that nobody should stop people from putting stuff on the internet, even if it's real dumb. Now we are engaged in a fairly mediocre enterprise, testing whether that podcast, or any podcast so conceived and so dedicated, can attract any sort of audience. But we choose to make these fart jokes, and the other jokes too, not because they are highbrow, but because they are easy. And so I assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and also that these two morons might make another episode. Amen.